We are all matching. Let's see. Testing. Why is it going? So, tell me, you guys, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
I went to Fred Meyer and got a box of French toast.
Delicious.
I was just frozen, too late to make French toast on my own. But I wanted French toast really bad, and I had to get out of the house real quick. So that's what I had. And turkey bacon and eggs.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That sounds really hearty for a last minute on the go breakfast, I gotta say. I'm impressed.
Which Fred Meyer?
Yeah, the Hollywood Fred Meyer.
Oh.
Yeah. I live a block away from it, right across the street. Like, okay. Literally. I just cross the street.
I didn't know you lived at Hollywood.
Salty, will you get closer to the microphones, please? Like, much closer.
Okay. I think I have a soft voice.
I know. That's why you got to get super close. Like, okay. You don't have to lick it, but there you go.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll just try to make a real effort in that regard. Testing.
We ate for breakfast.
Yeah, why not? That's a good one.
Okay, I had an apple with almond butter, and then I had like whole wheat seeded roll dipped in olive oil that I sprinkled some dried dill into. Ooh. And then soy milk with cinnamon and turmeric.
Oh my god, you're like delicious. A breakfast connoisseur.
Breakfast is the most important magical meal to me.
I thought that same thing, but all I had was a smoothie that I made. And toast with avocado on it with salt, pepper, and cumin.
Why so humble about your smoothie and toast and avocado?
You guys are so classy.
What was in your smoothie?
strawberries, mangoes, blueberries, a banana, almond butter.
Wow.
Some sort of nut milk. I think I'm doing flax milk right now.
Wow. How did you guys get so complex? I don't get this.
It's actually very easy to make a smoothie. You just pour everything in.
Especially, I live a block from the grocery outlet, so I get to go there and just get frozen stuff for very cheap. And then in the morning, it gives me something to look forward to with my day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Sean, I'm going to need you to please be speaking up a little bit more when
you're doing... A little bit closer to the microphone? How about that?
Because when you're talking, it's like the levels look really good, but then you kind of like trailed off a little bit towards the end because we were just casually talking. So yes. I just want to make sure we know.
Duly noted.
Focus on that. Ralph, I wish I could see you, but I'm sorry
That's
about
okay.
that.
Can you hear me okay, though?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you fine, and your levels look good to me. As good as they're going to look, I think. So without further ado... You are listening to Art Focus on KBOO 90.7 FM Community Radio. I'm your host, Amanda Clem, and today our guests are some of the artists who have conceived of Portland Tropical Gardens, a temporary public art garden oasis in Director Park, downtown Portland, on Southwest Park and Taylor. And it is filled with tropical plants, seed starts, like water garden, water plant garden,
mm-hmm.
and a tropical climate simulator, among other offerings. And I want to welcome Ralph Pouget, Sean Creedon, and Citier Ng. Oh my gosh, how do I say your last name?
Citier Ng.
Citier Ng.
Do we want to restart that?
Yes.
Okay, it's Ralph Pouget also.
Pouget, oh my gosh. We just did that too. Thank you. I want to welcome Ralph Pouget, Sean Creedon, Citia Ng, also known as Salty, with us in the studio today, and Michael Bernard Stevenson Jr. could not be here, as well as the other collaborator, Erica Didini. Thank you. So welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Let's see. This is for all of our listeners. This is the final week of this program, and it's been going on since the early part of the winter. In a space that was donated was it a donated space by the Parks and Rec department?
Yeah, so what it is that we have a temporary lease agreement with them that's in February. The original contract stated that we would have the space until the end of May?
End of April.
End of April. And they have since extended it into... up until June 10th, at which point we will vacate.
Great. So there's a solid week of programming left, including open hours So we'll maybe get into that like last minute programming towards the end of the episode here. But let's start kind of at the beginning, if you don't mind. I would love to know I would love the listeners to know how you conceived of this. I know I've known Sean and I know of Ralph Pugay, and your work in the past has kind of involved similar themes, including the use of live plants. So do mind just kind of giving us like a brief intro to that and how it kind of led all of you in the direction of Portland Tropical Garden.
Everybody probably has a different take of how they've been involved with Portland Tropical Gardens, but the project kind of started for me when I worked on a project called Sad Park with Ariana Jacob 2 years ago, and it was part of a house guest residency program, which I don't think exists anymore. But basically what Sad Park was it was the world's first park for seasonal affective disorder, and it was a temporary park inside of a large tent in the middle of winter, where we tried to blare as much light into this space as possible.
Super bright.
Yeah, as a way of conceiving of a public space that is specifically for seasonal affective disorder. And so from there, I was like really interested in the idea of asking questions around how to make a space like that more permanent. And it seemed to me that the best solution for something like that would be to create an indoor tropical park, considering that that won't be so seasonally dependent. And I've worked with Sean as part of that project, where he brought in plants in the space as well. So it seemed like he was a really good person to collaborate with on this project. And I was so happy that he was excited to be part of it. And CT is from the tropics, from Singapore, and was also really excited to be part of the programming.
Yeah, CTA, so you were in Singapore for a large portion of the run of this. So did it luck out that you were back in Portland for the extension of the exhibition, or were you going to be planning to come back to be part of the end of it?
Yeah, it was all planned. When we all got together to talk about the birth of PTG, I knew then that I would already be in Singapore for the winter months. I generally escape there because my program allows it. I'm doing my master's in fine arts in Portland State University right now. And so I generally escape the cold. And that's actually, interestingly, why PTG wanted to have its birth in that very cold season so that people could experience this warmth. So while I was back in Singapore, I played the role of the tropical correspondent, reporting from the tropics, and then I made some videos of the tropics from Singapore and Malaysia. And then it was planned that I would come back and then continue some programming over here.
That's great. It's wonderful that that worked out. One of my favorites was the desk that people were able to write you letters. But did you get any interesting correspondence while you were there? Have you met the people? Have you ended up meeting the people that wrote you those letters?
Yeah, that table is very special. It was made by Sean and Michael, and they call it the Plant Self-Care Module, or PCSM. And it's meant to be this completely, this thing made of organic matter, wood, and plants. Do you want to say a bit more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of an autonomous module that serves the specific purpose of writing letters specifically to CTA, but also to anyone. And this act of writing letter as a moment of self-care, but also kind of within the context of there's plants that you can also care for in the moment. So I know for myself, there's a lot of room for improvement in my long distance communication with friends and family throughout my entire life. So that was part of our thinking, making it was like, oh, I would feel much better if I kept in better touch with my distant friends and family.
Yes.
Yeah, so I received two letters in Singapore, but unfortunately I had already flown back here, so my father mailed them to me eventually, and I'm not sure who the people who wrote them are, although I know some of them are children. Oh. And one of them said, "Do you live in the jungle? Are you real? You look beautiful." And
you did read all of them, all the letters that you received during a performance the other evening.
Yeah, so I read out all the letters during a performance last week as tropical correspondent.
Yeah.
This is a good time to talk about all the performance for Tropical Homeland. And I started off with reading all these letters that had been sent to me. I had planned to respond to them, but somehow something in me felt like it wasn't the right time, or just leaving the responses out there in space felt more appropriate at that time. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I played a soundscape that I had made that comprised myself speaking in English, Mandarin, Hokkien, which is the Chinese dialect I speak, Malay, British English, and American English, meditating on the mutability of my tongue as a result of my upbringing. And while that played, and you know, conversations that reflect on culture as well, or the culture of Singapore, and the history, the colonial history of Singapore. While all that played, I chopped a durian with the heads of my family surrounding me. Mm. And a durian is one of the most wild tropical fruits, I should say. It's called the king of fruits. And it's this pungent, smelly, spiky
thing. Yeah, it's difficult to get into sometimes.
Yeah, it's
you have a big knife.
It takes some skill to chop it, and I was really happy that during my performance it was like the most perfect chop that I had.
Perfect timing for that.
It was
happen.
A bit too fast, in fact. However, it's been a really interesting process, because as in my quest to find durian here, I mean, I can only find frozen durian, and so it's a very literal reminder of the things that you can't get off home from here. And I have made attempts to create dishes, but they're not the same. Mm-hmm. And so those dishes, in a way, feel like interestingly failed performances as well.
When the ingredients don't live up to the expectation or the reality that you know could exist.
Yeah.
The potential that could reach. That is interesting. I like the integration of the food too into the plant and into the natural settings, the edible plants. One of the programs you did from Singapore too was a tour of all of the edible plants in your area, and that is something that I think is really interesting, a foraging aspect, and also just the way that your community and your surroundings can nurture you also. So it's the symbiotic relationship that seems like Portland Tropical Gardens is really doing a great job, you know, nurturing that. So, you know, you've done a lot of programming, really wide range of things, a lot of performance art, which I think is really interesting, and a lot of art. One of the programs I went to was the Lisa Schoenberg, who is in the Secret Drum Band. She's also an entomologist, and she gave the great lecture combining those two, you know, educating us all about her field work and how she incorporates that into her practice. So that was really interesting. You also did Spoiler Gardens. Sean, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, Spoiler Gardens was a sort of DJ-driven multimedia dance party moment that we had at Portland Tropical Gardens that involved CTA making her DJ debut and playing all sorts of pop songs and propaganda tunes from her upbringing in Singapore, and talking about the relevance of them to her life and to Singapore, and while also bringing in a collaborative group of people that I work with, we make a cable access TV show called Spoiler Room, and
is that on Open Signal?
It is on Open Signal. Yep, it's on Open Signal. You can find it on YouTube. Can I say the website name?
Yes.
SpoilerRoom.net has all of our previous episodes. We have 24 or 25 episodes up. Each one features a different DJ, and they're very fun and collagist to watch. Lots of like sort of nostalgic analog video processing. And and it was beautiful. It was music, life, party, all in this environment of Portland Tropical Gardens, spilled out into the rest of Director Park. And it felt really fun and like a beautiful synthesis of many parts of my practice.
Yeah. So yeah, the part that it is centrally located in Director Park, and it's a glass building, and so when there's lights on and it's dusk out, you can see right into it. It looks very alluring.
Highly visible.
So highly visible. So how did that? I mean, this is, you know, the people that you're making the work for, have come in, and what is like a typical experience of a stranger who's just happened upon Portland Tropical Garden? What can they expect when they arrive?
Well, the thing with Portland Tropical Gardens is this, like, I think amongst the members that have established it, which includes mostly people from the Portland State School of Art and Design community, is it like everyone comes into it with different intentions. But what's really interesting about it is that there's limitation of space and that we have the parameters of a plant. And with that, like the parameters of a public garden, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think all members sort of like try to maintain as like part of the environment in terms of the programming that we create over there. And so in terms of like people's expectations, usually when there's events, I think it adds a little bit of dynamism to the environments that normally like a performance art would be seen in, mm-hmm. right? And I think that sort of like generated a lot of programming on our end that are not necessarily like space-based. We've had like artists in residence before that have definitely like integrated the space into what it is that they would show for their final exhibition. But for the most part, we've been doing these events that really kind of like take into consideration the fact that this is obviously a project that is done by artists. But at the same time, we're also thinking about like how do you manifest a civic institution? Mm-hmm. As artists with limited resources. Granted, it's like, you know, the space was given to us by Portland Parks and Rec for a limited amount of time. But aside from that, it's like, it's a matter of like, how do we sort of like make something by extending our creative faculties mm-hmm. and just see what happens. And like the thing that we've found is like, you know, people respond to it in various interesting ways. The people that come into Portland Tropical Gardens that are always funny are the people that are always looking for the burger joint that used to exist there beforehand.
That's right.
So that's really interesting. But for the most part, it's like when people come in, I feel like they're really interested in the space, oftentimes not really knowing how to interact with the space. But I think what we've been really good at is maintaining a sense of hospitality in that environment. So it's like whenever somebody comes in, considering that it's a small space, we always try to be welcoming and talk to people about plants or like the different programming that we do there every week.
Yes, there's one, Ralph, that you've been doing this, the drawing on Saturday mornings, the live plant drawing, which has that been really widely received by, you know, park goers and visitors? Are they all, they're surely not all PSU art students.
No. A lot of people that have come in have just found the event through Instagram, actually. And we do have different people that are coming in, not necessarily from PSU, but just from like maybe the downtown neighborhood or like some friends that we have that know about us mm-hmm. That want to like draw on Saturday mornings. But I was doing that with another member of ours, Erica Dedini, who can't be here today. But, you know, the way that we've established it is that, oh, wouldn't it be nice to do something on a Saturday morning aside from brunch? And so it seemed like having the garden around was a perfect opportunity to, one, wake up early in the morning on Saturday mm-hmm. and get ready for it. And then, two, just make some new buddies.
That's great. Buddies, photosynthetic friends was the term that I learned from Sean yesterday. Yeah. That was a great. The photosynthetic community at Portland Tropical Garden is varied, but they're all plants from various tropical countries. Mm-hmm. And how did those plants come to be in this space? And they've been used before too, right, Dave?
Yeah. So since my involvement with Sad Park, providing the foliage in there, as well as also another house guest residency that Libby Werbel did with Portland Museum of Modern Art down in Pioneer Courthouse Square, my interactions and engagement with my photosynthetic community, all of the plants in Portland Tropical Gardens, except for some that were one that was donated and a couple that were sort of intakes from some friends and members of the public, all the rest of the plants are all my personal. Part of my personal collection and community. And so how they arrived there was by truck or by van or by plane or by my carrying lots of trips in there. And but it all sort of stems from these couple of collaborations where I brought my plants to engage through an artistic happening and a collaborative happening, and it just kind of grows out of that. Mm-hmm. And this is the most fully realized version of that part of the practice for me, where it's like, okay, I'm gonna bring everything and put it in this space and see what happens.
It fills up, and I think the times that I visited, it seemed like it was set up differently every time, so it was a really responsive space to the programs that you mm-hmm. were doing. And I know also one of the programs that you have is giving away cuttings of some of the plants. Mm. I also meant to ask you the other day, though, have you been getting cuttings in return? Has your collection or has the garden's collection grown in the time that it's been up?
We have received a couple of donations, yeah. And there was an idea for this I did do this one program called BYOB, Bring Your Own Botanical Story Share, where people were invited to come bring a plant that was memorable or that had a story around it, and share that with other people. I have many of my plants have stories like that. A lot of them are orphans or plants that I found in the trash or have cared for a long time. And that was fun. And there was plans for having sort of a plant doctor intake moments where it's like, oh yeah, if your plant is sick, bring it on down here. I'll see what I can do, because I have like this nurture overdrive. But that quickly became obvious that I was already like reaching my limit in terms of the plants that I could keep alive.
Yeah.
So
yeah, best to give advice at this point.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And so that's sort of the spirit that the plant empathy workshops, which you are referencing with the propagation, those kind of grow out of that interest in sharing this knowledge that I've gained. My personal history, I've been taking care of plants for a long time. I've worked professionally with plants at nurseries and in doing plant maintenance around town. But I'm not a scientist. I'm not a botanist. It's all very much from just sort of sheer curiosity and a will for nurture and a zest for life. That it comes from. And so that's what I've been trying to impart on people, help empower people. For me, it took a long time to figure out how to keep these things alive. And now I know a few simple tricks that I can easily pass on to other people.
Yes.
And give them the tools to have their own experiences, whatever that may be.
Yeah. Give people the tools to build their own community of friends.
Hopefully both indoor and outdoor. Yeah. You know, like my primary interest in houseplants comes from living in an urban space where there's not a lot of outdoor area for me to raise plants. And so bringing them into our interior spaces, I think, is just an important way of having other forms of life, non-human life, in our environments. And so, but my hope is that the things that the sort of sensitivity that I'm trying to promote and the conversation that I'm trying to foster is very easily applicable to plants outside in yards, in the woods, in meadows, on the mountains, all over the place.
That's right. I remember one of the first things that I realized when I went to a tropical country for the first time and seeing the plants that I had as houseplants growing just natively, naturally outside alongside the freeway blew my mind. And I felt so lucky that we were able to, like, that they chose to be able to thrive in this, like, kind of borderline climate of my house, which was not nearly humid enough, I'm sure, to make them thrive the way they meant to. But providing an experience like Portland Tropical Gardens, when it's humid, when it's, you know, you see these plants kind of thriving and you feel them differently. And that was a really nice experience. So how now can the public experience Portland Tropical Garden in its final week of programming? When is the last day? It's Sunday?
Sunday, June 3rd.
3rd.
So we're going to have an event. Our closing event happens from 4:30 to 6:30. And we're planning a couple of different events during that time. some of which include some games from the tropics. Mm. And then there's going to be like an initial DJ event that's happening. But aside from that, we should have open hours from this Thursday. Well, actually today we are open from 12 to 4. And then on Thursday, we're open from 5 to 7. And Friday, we're also open from 5 to 7. And chances are we might be open on Saturday, too. It just depends on who's available. One thing that I would say is that Portland Tropical Gardens is obviously a community-based effort. And so sometimes things are planned very nonchalantly and at the last minute. And so in the spirit of being chill in the tropics, just look for us on Instagram to see what event we might be having through the week.
Yeah, it's a great resource. You're very updated all the time.
Yeah, we try in considering like how many collaborators and how many moving parts there are, we find it to be a really direct mode of communication with our audience.
Just to add to that, on Sunday, we're also going to project a lot of photos that we've taken over the last few months and like collectively reflect as a community about what this space has meant to us, and also delving a bit more into the climate simulator.
Yeah. Something's going to happen to it.
Yeah.
We're also going to display some of the drawings and paintings that have happened during the Saturday drawing and painting sessions.
Okay, so it'll be a cumulative experience with something exciting happening with the climate simulator.
Yes.
I'll be there.
Yeah, definitely check it out.
And then we'll be ending with a closing meditation to thank the space and have a meaningful moment together right there.
Wonderful. A nice way to tie in everything that's happened in one concise week of final programming.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for talking with us today and sharing your project with us. And I hope to see some semblance of it in the future. So actually, our parting words, is there a future for Portland Tropical Garden?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. We have always sort of approached this particular moment of the project as iteration number one. We really, our hope is to at some point, like Ralph was saying, envision a permanent what this civic institution might look like and when made permanent, and so future projects might be more kind of pop-up sort of things, or an event featuring Portland Tropical Gardens or something like that. There's a wide variety of possibilities there, but definitely there will be things happening in the future. So definitely, definitely stay tuned.
We'll keep posted. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Amanda. Thank you.
Yay. You have been listening to Art Focus with Amanda Clem on KBOO 90.7 FM Community Radio.